listening to Fox Sports Radio.
RJ here. What is happening on a Wednesday, on a day in which you've got GMs upset about the NFL draft still going on? You've got quarterbacks, first-round draft picks, number one picks that are still on the open market. What is the Vegas lead here on a Wednesday?
Well, I tell you, this is one of my favorites. I've always wanted to do this. I haven't done it yet. A theme show. You don't know this yet. You know what the theme is? The theme is the Patriots and their future at quarterback, because not only do we have an amazing lead story involving Deshaun Watson, but if you look at the list, and we've got the list of potential quarterbacks and the odds for the Patriots, not just this year, but next year, it really tells the entire story of the NFL, the way the NFL is in the modern era. And thus, for me, the Las Vegas lead is going to be news on who will be the New England Patriots quarterback in the future.
That's right. The Patriots, for the first time in two decades, are looking for a quarterback to permanently move forward with. Not a Matt Castle type, but somebody to permanently move forward with. We've got Jared Stidham. We've got Brian Hoyer. But RJ, according to Vegas, those couldn't be the long-term fixes for the Patriots if the odds say any different.
Well, yeah, and I think really Stidham is the question. Well, first off, I usually do this on a pod. I'm going to open a Coke Zero. So I'm nice and fueled up for this, baby, because I'm excited. And see, that's healthier than most. Here's the thing. If you think about the Pats, the story is how there hasn't been much change or any change, really, at the foundational level. If I said to you, we didn't prepare this, but any sports fan probably is going to give the same answer. Who really mattered with the Patriots the last 20 years? Or during this dynasty, who really mattered?
I would say Brady.
Yep.
Yep.
And Belichick, right?
Yeah, those two, yeah.
Yeah. And Kraft, if you listen to the people that know, and they're right, oftentimes the first element of any franchise ever being great is the owner getting out of the way. I mean, if you really think about it, the Steelers are going to be on that list in the Super Bowl era, if not at the top of the list, right? If you just count Super Bowls. And what is the major characteristic of the Rooneys? They get out of the way, right? When's the Rooneys getting overly involved?
Yeah, they've took a hands-off approach, and they trust their coaches, and they've only had, a handful of coaches in the last 50 years?
I mean, this is amazing because it actually corresponds with my birth year. Is, you know, Chuck Knoll, you know, I was born in 1970. Chuck Knoll became the Steelers coach in 1969. He happened to draft number one Mean Joe Green in 69, and then in 70, Terry Bradshaw. You want to talk about starting a franchise, right? Right? Yeah. And literally, since then, the coaches of the Steelers have been three. Think about that. Three.
That's insane.
Right? I don't even have to name them. Well, I will. Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Tomlin. Amazing. And in theory, Tomlin could coach another, 25 or 20 years?
Oh, yeah.
Or 25?
Yeah.
I mean, what is he? Like 43, 44, right? It's crazy. I mean,
he's not very old.
Yeah. He's younger. He's in his 40s. So, amazing. You got to love that. All right, no doubt. Well, go through. Think about the teams. Let's just stay NFL. Listen, Jerry Jones, let's give him a bunch of credit for what he's done as a businessman, as a visionary for the league. I would make the case that Jimmy Johnson, who knows how many Super Bowls they could have won if he would have stayed out of the way. And my sense is, hey, give him credit for the hire of Jimmy Johnson. But other than that, what did he do organizationally, Jerry Jones? Was he helping scheme plays? No. But as he's gotten involved, Dallas hasn't done as well. Now, I'm not saying there can't be exceptions to this. Like, Cuban's involved, and the Mavs have done relatively well. But the question is, who owns the Spurs? I don't even think I know.
No.
Right?
I don't.
That's kind of the point, right? So it really has been. And I'm RJ Bell. We are straight out of Vegas. Brady and Belichick, and everybody else has been interchangeable. And not to them, I'm not saying that they don't care. I'm saying that us watching this story unfold, Brady, Belichick, and everybody else. And then, while the coach is still coaching, and not only still coaching, but coaching better. Bill Belichick in the last 5 years is better than he's ever been. Meaning if you just look at results and you look at Tom Brady, I don't know about better. I don't think better, but he's still, by many people's account, one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. Now, we can debate that, but to have the dynasty of dynasty, the greatest dynasty in NFL history in the Super Bowl era, don't you think it's a debate? Then you add in how difficult it is to do this when it's in the era of free agency, because you go back to those Cowboy teams, they had the same players, those three Super Bowls. The Steelers, same players. How did Chuck Noll do after that? Hardly won a playoff game in the 80s, right? So as much as I love Chuck Noll, this is a different level of difficulty, a different level of achievement the Pats have delivered, and now they're split up. It's literally the story of stories. And I think I lost sight of that just a little bit in that it was so soap opera-y about, you know, oh, he's down here at this game. He did this on Instagram. And I just naturally think that's all goo. You know, it's kind of like, okay, whatever. But at the core of it, the greatest dynasty in NFL history, and there's two people that mattered, and they've split up, and they're both still competing.
Yeah.
So it really is amazing.
It's Kobe Shaq.
Yeah, if Kobe Shaq was over 20 years, though, yeah. Right? You're right. That's a great analogy. But how long did they play together?
Oh, geez.
Like, what was it, like 5 years, 6 years, right?
Yeah, less than 10. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So Kobe started in, was it 98 or 96? I can't remember. But either way, it was less than 10 years. So we can look at that during the break. And this has been, you know, it would be Kobe Shaq if they would have split up Brady and Belichick right after, let's say, 2008. Like after their undefeated season, if they lost to the Giants as they did and they split up there, it'd be like, yeah, it'd be three titles. And I mean, this is, they did it again, right? And it's all, I mean, think about how old you'd have to be to remember clearly before Brady Belichick, meaning that let's say you start remembering things at 10 years old. If you're 30 years old right now, you hardly remember when the league was not dominated by Brady and Belichick. So if there's ever a time for a theme show, it's when there's no games and there's the best story, perhaps. I mean, this is it. This is the perfect storm.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So, RJ, the big story in the NFL, as we've been discussing, Tom Brady, now a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There are several layers to this story. For today, though, we focus on New England and their future at quarterback.
Yeah, and the amazing fact that Deshaun Watson is the second favorite to be the quarterback of the New England Patriots in 2021. So not this season, but next season. The odds are out, and the second favorite, Deshaun Watson. So let's examine that first, and then we're going to look at the other players on the list, and Dak Prescott is on that list, and he's the fourth favorite, and I think it makes sense, and I actually think Watson and Prescott's in a similar situation. So first, luckily, we have Steve Fezzik with us, only two-time winner of the Super Contest, maybe the best NFL handicapper in the world. He's right up there. He also has another role on the show. He is the nerdiest guy on the show. Fez, would you agree with that? See, like no comment. Fez. Oh, he must be down. All right. So when he's ready, he'll jump in. Who knows? There might be a meeting about, you know, the mountains getting moved or whatever. So, all right, I think we got him. So, Fez, would you agree, nerdiest guy on the show, Steve Fezzik?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, not even a debate, really, right?
Oh, I won't even go there.
If you met Fezzik, you'd have to say only like if Urkel came back from like 1996 could there be any competition. So, Steve, what we have is this all began with Deshaun Watson. Like, you know, quite frankly, a lot of things today, it all began on Twitter. So we have a tweet that Deshaun Watson sent out, and I actually thought it'd be best for you to read it. So, Steve Fezzik, this is a dramatic reading. We're going to do this, Jonas, dry, as they say in the business. No background music. Fez.
I don't know how I'm going to make it out of here clean. Can't even keep track of who plays for the other team. Iconic duos rip and split at the seams.
Well done.
I got to be honest. That was my favorite moment of the show so far.
Well done.
Mark the tape. Steve Fezzik, everyone. Pregame.com. I'm RJ Bell, Jonas Knox. Okay, Jonas. I think I might just quit. I mean, let's just put a repeat on. So, you're the coolest guy on the show, Jonas.
No, I'm not even close.
Well, I mean, it's sad for the show, but yeah, you probably are. So, now here's the question. What is that? What's your urban translator say that's being said there?
I don't know. I didn't even know it was a rap song until somebody pointed out it was Drake. I had no idea.
I mean, my sense is, if I'm looking at it as a 40-year-old, 40-something white guy, is I'm thinking that he wants to get out clean. I mean, meaning out. I mean, I think the key here is the word make it out. So make it out is I made it out of here alive, right? I mean, Rambo style.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously. So where's he trying to get out of? His car? You know, obviously, this is right after, you know, his favorite receiver is traded, right? So why? You know, did they get a haul? Was it a Herschel Walker type haul? No. So I think, did you read anyone that knows what they're talking about, an established expert, let's call it, that thought that trade Houston made was a good, was a net win for Houston?
No. I think people were justifying it, why the move was made, but the reality was, especially when you saw what Stephon Diggs went for to Buffalo, it was a bad trade for Houston.
And oftentimes looking at contracts is what's deceiving, meaning that you'll say, well, this guy's better than this guy. Why did he get a second? It's often how many years do you have left on the contract? And is it a reasonable contract? Because as we see in the NBA, sometimes contracts are so bad that you'll send a guy who's still, let's say, a viable eighth or ninth man. So let's say complain the NBA, but doesn't make a big difference. As that bloated contract, as that guy gets worse and worse, often you'll trade him and actually get back where the team that's getting rid of him has to throw a number one in. So you got to say, hey, take him. And oh, by the way, here's something very valuable and we'll take something back that doesn't really matter. So, you know, it's almost like, imagine if you're on a car trip and there's two cars, right? And then each car has an empty seat. And there's one guy that smells, he tells stories that are horrible, you know, whatever, right? And could you imagine saying, who wants John, you know, who wants Frank with us? And it's like, hey, you take Frank and here's $20, right? Take Frank and I'm going to give you 20. That's how bad contracts can get. So, but Hopkins' contract, it wasn't like a horrible contract as far as I could see.
No. It wasn't like in the NBA, to what you're referencing, there's expiring contracts. Expiring contracts have value, but DeAndre Hopkins was not that. He still had a ton of value, and his contract wasn't expiring.
And the bad contract was David Johnson, the contract right. that Houston took over for a running back that has shown nothing for 2 years.
So first off, Fez is making a great point. They took back a worse contract. That's probably the simplest way to explain it. But just to clarify, Jonas, two separate things in the NBA. When a contract is almost up, where it's a really bad contract, right? And tell me if you agree with this, because I know this decently, but I'm not a true expert, is the expiring is valuable because it opens up cap room for the
yes.
next year.
Yes.
Okay. So the theory is NBA has to match to some degree. I mean, there's a range that they can be out of, but you can't trade a contract that's $30 million a year for a contract that's $8 million a year. So you've got to try to match them up generally.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So at that point, the fact that that slot in the salary cap is actually going to become expired and that you can spend it on anything you want is valuable.
Yeah.
What will happen is, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, is with a team that is not trying to win now, they'll take a guy that's got 3 years left on a bad contract, knowing that, hey, we got to spend the money anyway. We'll pay this guy to, you know, sit on the bench. Then eventually you see buyouts or stuff. And it doesn't really matter because those slots in the salary cap are being taken up by this horrible player for a team that's not trying to win right now, where the team that gets rid of that bloated contract is now able to spend that money somewhere else, or they're able to get someone from that team they're trading with. So in general, it's just you only got so much money to spend no matter what with a hard cap, and you've got to swap it sometimes, and they're willing to get rid. If you're going to get rid of a contract that's got two or three years left on it, you've got to put an asset with it.
Yeah, it's a completely different strategy and business model in the NBA as opposed to the NFL.
Yes. The beauty, though, is, or what makes this Houston move all the more perplexing, the trade for a worse contract. So regardless of how we split hairs, we would say, well, contractually, are the Houston better off or worse off? Think worse off. Okay, well, who's the better player? Oh, the guy Houston sent out of town. So it's like, so we're now spending more money, or not so much more money, because receivers make more money than running backs, but we're spending our money less smartly, and we have lesser players on the field. I mean, it's hard to debate that that's not the Houston situation. They're spending the money less intelligently, and they have lesser players on the field today than before the trade.
Yeah, and I also think part of the reason this move was done, I think there was a personality conflict, obviously, with Bill O'Brien, but part of this is I think Houston realizes what that contract is going to look like for Deshaun Watson, who is rumored to be the next Patriots quarterback, as we were talking about, in a couple of years. They realize that that is going to be a big deal, and so they're trying to free up future space for DeAndre Hopkins if they can, and it's a loaded draft class at wide receiver, so maybe that was the thinking.
Yeah, but if that's the case, if you want to free up future space, then what does the next year have? They're not meaning if they sign or don't sign Watson, whenever they sign him, this next year Watson's under contract for what he is. They have that, so that situation is what it is. Why make the team worse next year? What you just said, Mike, and I know you're not supposed, it's not your job to defend Houston. You're playing devil's advocate to some degree. But the question is, if they would have traded Hopkins a year from today or a year from the day they traded him, then that would speak to what you're saying, freeing up some cap space for the future, you know, this future deal with Watson. But what is the next year have to do with that?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Right?
Nobody can figure it out.
Maybe what it is that no player or no person that walks the earth can be an NFL coach and also be a full-time GM. And even Bill Belichick, who has more power than any person on any NFL team, even Belichick has someone that's the I guess you'd call it the de facto GM, but in name especially, where I guess they call that titular. The titular GM, the title of GM, goes to someone else. Does Belichick ultimately have veto power? It seems so.
Yeah.
But Belichick's not doing the paperwork. It's like, how do you have an NFL coach that, even if you're optimistic about O'Brien, you'd say he's what? The 10th or 12th best coach? I mean, we do Houston radio. They hate it. I mean, like, this is the biggest show in Houston, and they think he's horrible. So you can debate how good O'Brien is, but he's not a super-duper elite coach. Would you agree with that?
No, not at all.
So how can you also be doing a second job well at the same time?
That's the Houston Texans.
I mean, so
it's weird.
Yeah. So I think it's fair to say that Watson is frustrated. No, by the way, if you're doing this for Watson and you need some HR help at GM, have Watson come in and walk in and say, dude, you are the future of the franchise. Here's our situation. We want you to help guide us, because there's one of two things that would happen. Watson would buy in to what you want to do, and thus doing things that might not make a ton of sense, but does for the long term, would then buy you something with him. He'd be thinking, yeah, I see you guys don't like this move to the world, but we got a plan. If they could get him saying, Deshaun Watson saying we, about the front office and the future of the franchise, then you've won. Doesn't matter what, you can trade anyone pretty much. Watson is more important. But if you're going to alienate Watson while supposedly making moves to sign him, doesn't seem like that's a very smart plan.
No, it doesn't.
So maybe we can just conclude that Watson is going to be in a position to choose. Now, it's not as simple as you think.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Fez was correct. Cal McNair has taken over the son, so the wife has ownership. The father passed away, Texans owner, Cal McNair. Now, let me say this. I don't know Cal McNair. I didn't know he existed till recently. But let's just say this. He looks like old school Texas to me. I've just read he went to Rice. He's, you know, obviously his dad's been or was a, you know, very rich guy for a long, long time. I don't see McNair being particularly forward-looking when it comes to some of the progressive issues of the day. Could be wrong. He might be. But my sense is, if I'm a betting man, I very rarely know absolutely anything, and I think we all rarely know absolutely anything, but we think we do. And I'd make a major bet that Cal McNair is not helping with Deshaun Watson particularly. But we'll see. So the premise is, if Watson wants out, if he's disgruntled, can he be kept? I don't think he will be able to be kept with the Texans. And if you're, Jonas, if you are Deshaun Watson and you've had a frustrating first, let's say, 5 years of your career because you think some of your best years have gone by without the success you maybe deserved, I mean, to finish Belichick's career, wouldn't that be the dream?
I mean, yeah, that would be the dream. It's just they have so much team control over him that I just don't see how there's any way possible.
Let me ask you this. Let me, and we'll pick this part up tomorrow, but let me pose this question, give you one quick chance to answer, and then we'll talk about Dak. Is if Deshaun Watson looks you in the eye, you're the Texans management, and he says, under no, I got enough money. See my bank account? I will not play another down. My knees can't take it. I don't trust you guys. It's my health at risk. I will not play another down for the Houston Texans. And literally doesn't go to Cabo. He literally goes and he doesn't say another word. How long can you hold out if you're the teams?
I mean, I would tell him. We'll
you can't
try
and go. You can't go 12 months.
No, and I would tell him, let's keep this as quiet as possible so you don't hurt our trade value, because we've seen Carson Palmer do
all
it.
Right.
Jay Cutler also wanted out of Denver after he had a run-in with Josh McDaniels there. So yeah, it would need to be wrapped up pretty quick, and I would tell him and his camp, keep quiet so we can at least work on something.
Okay, and you know what? Literally just that one state, and again, I love that you're a fair debater, meaning if you start believing something, you quit saying it, which actually really impresses me, right? Because the guys just keep going with the loot. There's nothing the team really can do, right? They can try to manage his exit. They can manage his exit.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
So really, it's in the power. I've been saying it. Their player empowerment is it. So, Fez, last question from you. As you look at this whole conversation, and tomorrow we will get into Dak Prescott, though, the analogy is Dak has a tag on him. Now, would Dak do that extreme? Like, I won't play. I don't think so. In fact, I very much don't think so. But you know what I know? Dak's a year ahead. So, Dak, there's 1 year they could keep him. Let's say he stays disgruntled with Dallas, plays this year out. Next year, he's got a ton of freedom.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.